put the straw down. Step away from the sucking machine. You will not put that plastic in your mouth. We have spoken with our Seattle Spirit voice.
We're actually making this up as we go along.
If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor.
It is an act of war to invest in white supremacy and terrorism with this bunker.
Well, clearly, what else would a police station be but an act of war? That's the actual mayor of Seattle you just heard from. Man, there's a lot to get to in this segment. Let's start here. I got a note from David and Bothell. And this is big. This is big. A little scofflaw going on. I mean, stop the music for a second. He went to Dick's Drive-In. Got himself a hamburger, some fries, and a straw. A straw! And he wrote to me and said, is Dick's flouting the law? No, they have a 1 year to be educated. I want to know, have the police gone up yet to educate Dick's about this sin of handing out the straws? Oh, and I got something planned on that front. I'm not even close to done with the activism on that. I intend to start the Seattle Straw Exchange. Here's what I intend to do. We cannot stigmatize straw usage. That's the old way of thinking. We cannot criminalize straw usage. That's the old way of thinking. Already, I see colleagues reaching in to garbage cans to pull out straws to use them. Using dirty straws can lead to disease. The Seattle Straw Exchange, here's what we're going to do. I want to get on Amazon or on Costco the biggest packs of straws we can find for the least money. I'm thinking $2 or $3 for these cheapy straws. I want to send them to the Seattle City Council straight off Amazon or Costco for the Seattle Straw Exchange so that just like with the needles, we can set up a straw exchange. They did it for needles. Why can't they do it for us? Right, on to the serious stuff. I said it is absolutely red alert, and it is. The Washington State Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, is, I think, leaning towards validating an initiative that should not be validated. I-1639 broke the rules significantly. The initiative people signed does not have the language on the back. And it is bound by law to have that language in at least two different places. The Constitution binds them to that, and an RCW binds them to that. Kim Wyman, in my reading of this, can absolutely, from a constitutional perspective, she's sworn to uphold the Constitution. It is unconstitutional for an initiative to go forward in our state that does not have the full and complete language of it. It also violates an RCW I've quoted. We talked to Kim last Tuesday, but first we spoke to Alan Gottlieb, okay? And we talked about, you never know. You never know what's going to be proposed as a law, because if you don't have to have the clear language, who cares? Put a Cat in the Hat poem on the petition.
Get the subject matter. I wish the court, while they hate guns, I wish they would get off the whole gun kick with it and realize what they're doing in the future to the initiative process, because now anybody can put anything they want practically on the back of an initiative, and you never know what's being proposed as law.
Exactly. Let's start there. If this moves forward, if Kim allows this to go through, now, why do you have to print anything? The law is clear. The Constitution is clear. You have to put the full, clear, and complete readable language of the initiative on the actual petition you sign. It's not there. And Kim is going to allow this to roll forward. And 1639 is an initiative that steals your health care rights if you beg the government to buy a gun. If you don't like what you're hearing, you want to get in touch with Kim and politely request that she turn back, do the right thing, text the word Kim, K-I-M, to 800-465-8770. Brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. We'll send you the number to Kim's office. Leave a message. I'm sure they're closed by now. Leave a message. Be polite, be firm, and tell them what's going to happen if you see a Republican Secretary of State let this roll forward. Alan Gottlieb with the Second Amendment Foundation, I mean, he laid it all out. He feels like they're being robbed from their day in court.
They don't like the initiative. They kick it back. I mean, if they like it, they don't want to kick it back. This is a total political decision by basically a bureaucrat at this point that's stymieing us from getting our day in court.
And when he says that, here's what he means by a bureaucrat. This was an assistant, a deputy court commissioner who wrote this decision. And incidentally, as I understand it, that deputy court commissioner referenced the wrong RCW. Now, Kim's note is leaving me very disappointed and very, very concerned. But Gottlieb and the Second Amendment Foundation understand this. Great allies. They've won a lot of these cases in court.
Lucky for gun owners in the United States, about 80% plus of all this case law supporting Second Amendment rights in the courts have been won by the Second Amendment Foundation and or our attorneys. So virtually all the case law that now has to get quoted on gun rights in the courts has been won by the Second Amendment Foundation.
So let me boil this down. Does the Constitution of Washington State matter? The Constitution is very clear. Article 2, Section 37 applies to initiatives and mandates. It says it mandates that an act revised or amended, and I quote, shall be set forth at full length. That is not the case with this gun-grabbing initiative, I-1639. It is not set forth in full. There are entire portions of it missing. Okay? That's against the rule of law. I talked to Kim Wyman about this, and she says that there's some things she can look at, some things she can't.
The legislature doesn't give me the direct authority to be able to really look at the content of a petition. There's certain parameters like the oath that's on the front of the petition sheet. So we're working through that and obviously checking the Constitution to make sure that the Constitution doesn't somehow trump that.
Kate, the Constitution does trump that, Kim. It does, and I brought this up on the air. Okay, the Constitution, I just mentioned Article 2, Section 37, says and mandates that an initiative shall be set forth at full length. It is not there. RCW 29A.72.100 calls for petitions to have, quote, a full, true, and correct copy of the proposed measure printed on the reverse side of the petition. Did not happen. Constitutionality, Kim?
Courts have clearly through the years always said, even if it's unconstitutional, that's not grounds to reject it from making it on the ballot.
No, I disagree. I disagree, Kim. There are a couple of different precedents. State versus Thorne is a precedent in that area, and Scannell versus Seattle. The state constitution supersedes in every way, shape, matter, an idea, faction, or form the RCWs. The Constitution is clear. Kim, you took an oath to uphold the Constitution. You cannot let this initiative pass. You will invalidate your office, Secretary of State. You really will, with a bunch of Republicans. You'll invalidate a reason to vote for a Republican Secretary of State, just like was it Ralph Monroe who gave the election to Christine Gregoire when he was okay with more votes than voters? Okay, and you will invalidate this initiative. This initiative will never be valid. It will never be right to follow this initiative. I said it was big, and it was also this. Over the weekend, there were 500 or so people who went out and did the right thing to become citizens of the United States of America in our state. And it happened in Seattle. Q13's Ave J. Javanel spoke with Andrea Andrews, a petty officer for the Navy, served for a year and then became a U.S. citizen yesterday.
I feel honored. I feel humbled. I cannot believe it.
Andrews is originally from Romania, but America has been her home for a while. She dedicated her life to the Navy about a year ago.
I felt a need deep inside of me to do something more than a regular job.
And now she's dedicating herself entirely to the country.
Now, that's a great story. There's another great story, a Japanese-born Fumiko David.
My children are Americans, and my grandchild is an American. Now, I am an American, too, so we all belong to the same country.
500 people stood in line. 500 people took the right way in. 500 people took the citizenship test and became citizens of the United States of America, including Darren Bradshaw, native of Dublin, Ireland.
Obviously, I'm going to register to vote. I'm going to get my passport, and then I'll just have to see kind of how things go. Coming in illegally is not the right way to do it. People that are escaping persecution, sometimes they just have no choice.
Okay, so he makes that statement, and then who shows up to give a speech?
But, pardon me.
Sleepy Jay Inslee. What's this all about, Jay? 500 people stood in line to become citizens of the United States of America. Your thoughts, Jay?
America will never be separated from Lady Liberty, and our children will not be separated from their parents.
Huh. Legal immigrants stand in line, pay the enormous amount of money it takes to become U.S. citizens. And Jay Inslee. all about the illegals. We'll come back at the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Oh, you don't want to hear it, but I got to tell you, we got another case. Two justice systems, one for us, another for the connected. And I also hate to mention this, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan was involved in keeping this thing quiet. Remember Imran Arwan on July 3rd, right before the holiday. He had his day in court. Oh, yeah, he's the guy who stole the congressional server, it appears, whose family took equipment and illegal monies back to back overseas. He's the guy that's been he's pled to bank fraud, but there's so much more to this that they didn't even want to touch. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. I really appreciate you, because without enough of you, there's no me in this role. And for many years, I dreamed of doing talk radio in this city and, in fact, in this building. So if it's comfort to you, every single day about this time, 3 to 6 p.m., you help one person live a dream come true. So thank you for that, and I mean it. Two sets of laws. We talked last hour about the hilarious, if it weren't so serious, note that Ron Johnson sent to the Inspector General, where he goes through the myriad of things that the Inspector General decided to not ask about the Clinton investigation. And if they asked, they decided to hide the answers. And there's about 30 questions in there that are all devastating. And devastating in particular, they chose not to ask him, or if they did ask, they hit him. Now, this has been hidden, and this is unquestionably coordinated. There was, first of all, two heroes in this. One is Luke Rosiak with the Daily Caller. Luke Rosiak, who has been following this forever. He's really the main hero in this. Mary Chastain at Legal Insurrection has based a lot of her work on his. She just tends to I think, explain this better. It is about a guy and a family headed by a fellow named Imran Arwan, okay? Imran Arwan was a former systems administrator for Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You remember that Wasserman Schultz had occasion to threaten the D.C. police chief who had taken some of the computers from her staff. Why? Because Imran Arwan, according to the Democrats' investigation, according to the Congressional Sergeant at Arms investigation, nonpartisan, Imran Arwan and his family had made thousands upon thousands of unallowed accesses to the National Security Committee computers of the Democrats. The D.C. police chief wanted to look into this and had one of their computers.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
So she threatens the D.C. police chief. That's where this began to get weird. Arwan was known for a year or more to be having these unallowed access sessions into these caucus computers. In fact, the amount of times, 5,735 times. Arwan is known, as I understand it, through the work of Rosiak at the Daily Caller, to have copied information from the Democratic caucus server, which contained national security sensitive information, to have had unauthorized copies of this. Arwan is known through Rosiak's work to have employed his entire family to work within this congressional IT world, even though he was the only one who had any verifiable knowledge of IT, as I understand it. And they paid themselves 3 to 4 times what the going rate was, Imran Arwan and his family. Schultz became aware of the investigation into Arwan 6 to 7 months to maybe even a year into this and refused to fire him. One of the other, well, in fact, many of the other congressional members on the Democratic side refused to fire him. Xavier Becerra, he knew about this, refused to fire him. He was the chairman at that point of this caucus. Arwan's wife was being charged, but she fled overseas with a bunch of money that Arwan had committed bank fraud to get by pretending he was his wife on the phone to the congressional bank. Arwan, and this is why this is coordinated. Have you heard Paul Ryan speak of this? Have you heard Paul Ryan speak of nearly 6,000 unauthorized accesses to national security sensitive data? No. Arwan got his hearing in court on July 3. The results of which were announced on July 4. That is called burying the news, and everybody knows it. Have you heard Paul Ryan speak about this? No. Now, it gets more interesting. This guy pled to one charge of bank fraud. For that, he gets to remove his GPS monitor. The prosecutor said he would not oppose a sentence of probation. They've dropped the charges against his wife. They've dropped the charges against former systems administrator Hina Alvi, also involved in the unauthorized access to these computers. Now, here's the funny thing. The server in question disappeared and was replaced with a server that looked like it. So this guy was apparently caught with the caucus server that he had replaced with another server, but with information removed from it. That's obstruction. That's destruction of evidence. It's blatant. One charge of bank fraud. Paul Ryan hasn't even mentioned this. But let's not forget the real panic, the real outrage. The president of the United States may get to pick, may get to nominate, God willing, a Supreme Court justice.
Let's say, for example, hypothetically, Michael Cohen turned over a number of documents, millions of documents, to the prosecutor. And some of those, and tapes as well, some of those show that Donald Trump was far more involved than Trump is saying. And all of a sudden, you have a situation where, well, the U.S. District Court subpoena Donald Trump. Can a president be indicted? If Trump picks a judge who he knows would not go along with Robert Mueller, well, that would certainly benefit him.
Yeah, this all intersects at some point.
So that is bigger news on what might happen.
Let's just imagine that Michael Cohen produced millions of pages of documents from his sock. And some of those documents were related to Trump actually being Putin. I mean, actually Putin, not working for Putin, but actually being Putin himself in a Trump mask. And let's say that those documents came forward and we learned that in addition to actually being Putin, he had a mini me living inside of him who is a mini version of Karl Rove. Now, in that case, he may pick a justice that would not agree with Mueller. That's news. That's speculation. That's their focus when a Pakistani immigrant and his family who immigrated from Pakistan, who took our information back to Pakistan, who took ill-gotten monies back to Pakistan, who stole a server that was under investigation and replaced it with a decoy server, who was involved in making almost 6,000 unauthorized accesses to national security sensitive information on the Democratic caucus server, who made unauthorized copies of said information and apparently sent it to Pakistan, pleads guilty to one charge of bank fraud.
And that's not news. That's hidden. And Paul Ryan is a big reason it's hidden. You don't indict mine, Paul Ryan says. I won't indict yours, Nancy Pelosi says. One of the oldest games going in D.C. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show. A fascinating, fascinating thing that is going on with the American left is someone somewhere presses a panic button and, man, they line up. All of a sudden, they go out, time to panic on this. Yes, sir, I'm panicking right now. Thanks for listening to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. My wife was talking about this the other day, that there's this new thing in liberal politics. New thing in liberal politics. That it is this coordinated panic. It's bizarre. So the president is elected. And does anyone remember the first panic? The first panic was Russia. All of a sudden, liberal friends I've had and family members, you don't get it. You don't get it. This guy he's a Russian agent. You have elected a Russian agent. My God, what have you done? Then the series of panics that continue, and it never ceases. They just press the panic button, and people line up to panic. What are we panicking on? Hey, what are we panicking on? Oh, okay.
Everybody panic! In the government. There will be no refund. Your refund will be escaping this death trap with your life. You have a small child, use it as a shield. They love and tender meat. Tell me your sodas. Do we love sugar?
We start now. The panic is the Supreme Court. And MSNBC, they're happy to mock Amy Coney Barrett's faith. Incidentally, if you're going to mock this group that she holds to, read about the group. They don't use the phrase handmaiden. They used this, stopped using it years ago. It was created long before The Handmaiden's Tale. There is no comparison to The Handmaiden's Tale. They're now called female leaders in her group. It's a Catholic-oriented group. It's not a cult. There's an elected leader. The leader is term-limited. The leader's happy to give interviews. There's a list of members. They disclose their finances. There's nothing cult-like about it.
For example, on Barrett, she might have some problem with the handmaid thing, right? Which I think a lot of people would have problems with.
Amy Coney Barrett, is somebody who is known to be deeply religious. She's a Catholic. She belongs to a very small, tight-knit...
Right there, if that doesn't freak you out. She's a Catholic. But a deeply religious one. Not like a pretend one. Like Nancy Pelosi, an actual religious one.
Group called People of Praise that has received some scrutiny lately for...
Scrutiny? Well, we know what that means.
Well, there's less orthodox beliefs, preaching an ideology that says the husband is the head of the wife in the family unit.
Which is biblical. And it depends on how you practice it. And the head can mean many things. And husbands and wives who believe that are often quite happy. And they still argue. And the husband can still defer to the wife on many things. And on most things, there's discussions. And some guys are real jerks with that.
That's all going to come out
Let's
in a
way.
Let's
see how that plays out when the wife is in the Supreme Court.
Let's see how that...
Exactly.
You know, panic!
Ask Ginsburg's husband. When you look at some of the potential weaknesses here, this People of Praise reported ties that she has, an interesting religious group that, for example, labels heads of household, the men, the heads, the women, the handmaidens.
No, they don't. They label the women female leaders. You're using an old terminology, but you know that. That's one form of panic. Over on CNN, Jeffrey Toobin, he's got the other panic.
It's real now. The idea that Roe v. Wade is one vote away from being struck down is going to send a panic into the liberal base.
You got to panic. And people line up for this. And here's what's so fascinating to me is that no one on the Democrat side seems to be saying, wait.
I'm a little upset because I was promised an apocalypse. I was promised an apocalypse with the tax thing. And so I dropped out of college, 19 credits short. I could have passed. I could have graduated. But you told me that the world was going to...
No one is coming back to say, wait a minute. What about the panic we were told last time? This is the one that really sets things over the top.
This is a strategy of base of a sort of ethnic cleansing, and we're in the beginning of it.
That one sets things to a level that is literally explaining that we're in the early stages of separating people by race, putting them in a line, and then killing them. Now, the only time that's been done in the United States, years ago, obviously, slavery and the Native American Wars, Indian Wars, that was done, and it was terrible, and it was a history of warfare, and it was a history of brutal slavery, and we're not alone in that, and we know that. The only other time it's been done is Planned Parenthood. It's the only other time it's been done. Eugenics, well, it's been done there. Science, well, it's done there. Modern eugenics, selecting babies, either via race or other sort of characteristics, being done there, or in Iceland. Being done there where they pretended they've eradicated Down syndrome, but they haven't. They've eradicated babies who have Down syndrome, and they're claiming, oh, we've got rid of Down syndrome. No, you didn't. You got rid of babies who had it. So this over-the-topness that people line up to do, and it's going to go into round two with people like Dick Durbin. It's going to go into round two with people like Zerlina Maxwell.
His list is all people who we have an understanding are in opposition to Roe. You know, Amy Barnett went to Notre Dame. She is very Catholic.
Wait, hold on. Did she say Notre Dame?
Dame. She is very Catholic.
Wow. See, right there.
She had a famous moment with former Senator Al Franken during her hearings about how she spoke essentially to a hate group without really understanding the full context.
She spoke to a hate group. And you'll see the posts. You'll see them from your friends and family. Do you understand? She spoke to a hate group. We're electing a woman who is a handmaid. Well, they don't use that phrase anymore. Well, but she was a handmaid. No, she's never been one. Okay, but... But she spoke to people who did that, and she spoke to a hate group. No, it's not a hate group. It's the Alliance Defending Freedom. Well, they're a hate group. What do they do that's hateful? Well, they walk around hating. No, they walk around suing on behalf of civil liberties, like not forcing girls to shower with naked men. That's not hateful. Well, but the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Southern Poverty Law Center said, the very definition of being led around by the nose is where the Democrat Party has gotten. And it's not just kids. In fact, millennials, I was reading this, millennials are leaving the Democrat Party, particularly, and this will be shocking to you, white millennials are walking away from the Democrat Party. But people my age, people our age, I'm nearly 51, people our age, to watch them have a panic button inserted in their mind, to rent that space in their mind. You hit the button, I panic. Folks, look back across a year and a half. No one died through the healthcare legislation. No one. No one died because of the tax plan. No one. The internet still works just fine. And the so-called net neutrality, which wasn't neutral at all, put the government in charge, has changed nothing. We have not been bombed by North Korea. That did not occur. There's been zero findings of collusion between Trump and Russia in over a year and a half, and we don't even get to know how much money. Every one of these panics you've been taught to and you've been Pavlovian dogged into responding to has turned out to be a nothing. And then it was the border, right? And now the kids are being reunited. But the DNA proves they didn't have a plan. No, it proves that they doubt some of the stories of people who are saying these are their kids. That's what it proves. All right, we'll come back, wrap up the day with a personal note.
Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. On a personal note tonight, I got a Facebook note from a listener, and actually someone I've known for about 10 years. She's a listener to the program, sort of middle of the road politically, not horribly conservative, in fact, not horribly political. But she wrote me this following note. I got her okay to share it with you. It's from Deborah. Dear Todd, congratulations on your success in talk radio. You always find a way to sort of rise to the top of the things you choose to do. Ha ha. I don't know why you're saying ha ha, Deb. It's not very nice. However, in listening to your program, I really get queasy when you start talking about abortion. I never told you this, but I had an abortion when I was 21 years old. As you know, I've got three kids, and I was at the time single and confused, and I had a lot of chaos in my life. And I'd been dating a guy that I didn't really intend to be with, but he was helping me get out of a relationship. It's called a bridge relationship, I think. Yes, I was pretty messed up at the time. I became pregnant with which would have been my fourth child. And together, we decided that we would go get an abortion. And he took me to the clinic. And we, in fact, had that abortion. He's remained sort of a friend to me throughout the years. He's supportive of me. We always have that decision in common. He's embraced abortion as a tactic where I have nights where I cannot sleep. I cannot sleep thinking that I've ended a life. And when you do your program and you talk about these things, I know you say that you're nobody's priest or professor. You know, you call yourself a broken cat, ha-ha. What? I don't get the ha-ha thing, Deb. I'm a broken cat, you know that. But I do feel judged, and I think a lot of people do. I would caution you to take that into account when you talk about this. Your message is important, particularly your message of choice, and I wish you would repeat that message of choice from time to time. I think I speak for a lot of women when I tell you we're open to this position, but it's just not helpful when we feel that we're being called evil. I know you're not saying that. I know that you have respect for me and my husband and my kids, but I just wanted you to know how that's coming across on the air. Deb, thanks for the note. It's not the first time I've heard this. I've heard it from family members. I've heard it from people who are very, very close to me. And I've sensed it from others, and I sense it to this day. Look, a lot of people have done this, okay? And a lot of people have made that decision. I've yet to meet someone who really is happy about it, really thinks it was great, and celebrates it. And the reason I discuss it on the air is because we're being told to celebrate it. Now, I'll tell you this. I have close family members who have gone through that and have made that decision. And clearly, I still love them. There's nothing to be gained by not loving a family member because they made that decision. It is, though, on the topic of choice that I wanted to talk about. All of us have choices, okay? And the argument of being pro-choice, it really ignores something. There's a series of choices you get to make, and you should always get to make. You have the choices to whether you date. You have the choices whether you become sexually intimate with someone. If you do that, you have a choice of using contraception or not using contraception, okay? Those are three choices you have and you should always have. Now, if those choices are stolen from you, in my judgment, we're talking about a different universe. But most commonly, you have those choices. It's when the choice affects others that we need to stop using the nomenclature of choice. Really, at that point, you're not talking about choice anymore. Because you're making a decision for someone else, someone who doesn't get a voice. And this is where I get to the personal note. The postscript to Debbie's note, to Deb's note to me. The P.S. Here's what it reads. P.S. Todd, I think what really bothers me about my decision to have had an abortion is that I silenced a voice that never got a chance to speak. You know enough about my kids to know they speak three languages and are artistic young people. In other words, they're filled with things to say. And I think what really bothers me and keeps me up at night is I wonder what that young one would have said if I had made a different choice. So when you get to that point, and if you get to that point, if God forbid you're struggling with it now, can I just ask you to do one thing? And I don't have any business doing this. This is your life. I truly am not your priest or your professor or your confessor. I'm too broken for that. But I just ask you to remember that if you are making a choice that affects another, the other should be talked to. The other should be consulted. You can't consult an infant, but you can know this, that the infant in your body will recoil from the abortion device coming at it, be it a pair of scissors, be it, God forbid, acid or a vacuum. When it enters the womb, the child will recoil. They may not have a voice, but they have that action. Now look, you are going to live your life. You are going to make your decisions. And I'm quite capable of loving you beyond this. And we all should be. But the word choice has been used to reprogram people and the way that they think. I suggest for women and men who are going through this, you just remember the equation. If the choice involves two, the other should be talked to. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.